Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry to interrupt. Can I introduce you to Michael McKenzie from ABC Radio National? The First Bite program, which he's actually recording now, and he wanted to come and see what you guys are up to with Barbara and David. So, Michael McKenzie, I'll leave you with him.
Can I come and sit in? Is that
sure.
All right? Yeah?
Have a seat.
Thanks.
I'm also saying congratulations to Sarah because...
The guys that Ian Parmiter just referred to are the 17 students studying food writing during Adelaide's Tasting Australia Festival. And we'll get the inside knowledge as well from Professor Barbara Santage and journo David Sly. But first, really, how hard is it to write about food and drink? Surely all you have to do is rubbish a restaurant, use lots of adjectives, mix in a big pinch of pretension, and you're done, right? Let's see.
Not everyone can just get up and leave and fly halfway across the world and eat a bowl of soup covered in Szechuan sauce that burns your mouth and get that experience. So I want to give that to people. Hi, I'm Lizzie Malt. I'm from Brisbane and I'm a chef who is a typical cliche who cannot spell, and I'm here to learn how to write and become a food and travel writer.
So what piece are you working on?
Well, today I'm going for an overview of word of mouth. Three of the chefs who have traditionally come from different backgrounds from Europe.
300 words?
That's correct.
Deadline is when?
5:30.
You've got about an hour and a half to go.
That's correct.
Can we hear your opening part?
My first line is, it started with a bang. Pride was battled out passionately between the European nations at the first word of mouth session at Tasting Australia. Guy Grossi, Miguel Maestro and Jean-Louis Gillard were calmed down briefly to allow the MC Joanna Seville to ask, what is so great about French food? And Miguel bursts out and yells, butter, butter, butter. And of course, the whole crowd laughs, and I think they knew what they were in for the next 45 minutes. I'm here to challenge myself. You know, not only on one, learning to spell, but, you know, being able to give a different range of writing.
Posted one piece of copy each day is going to be posted on the In Daily website in Adelaide. Sarah's is the first one that's going to be published today. So at about midday today, when that goes out, that's going to be as the In Daily prompt, that story's going to be published and then prompt people back to the website where people will be able to read all of your copy.
Hi, my name's David Sly. I'm a freelance journalist and have been writing for up to about 20 different magazines nationally and internationally for about the last 8 years. Before that, I spent a career in newspapers for over 25 years. I'm one of the last of the Mohicans, the old dinosaurs that have been writing and working in print all of my working life.
You read from authors that you do like. You also read pieces from authors that you don't like, because that helps you qualify what you believe is good and bad, what you do and don't want to pursue with your own style of writing.
I didn't just walk into a food and wine writer's job, but I would get the occasional story printed because I would just say, look, my friends and myself are making our own wine. How does somebody out in the suburbs go about making their own wine? The food and wine editor at the time thought it was an interesting enough story, so that one got published. A few months later, I travelled to Mexico. I'm a big fan of Mexican cooking. We came back with a couple of neat recipes. They said, okay, that sounds interesting as well. So when enough smart information arrived, I was able to write a valid story that then got published. That started a momentum. The ball started rolling. Often in food, you're talking about the same thing all the time. You're talking about meat, you're talking about vegetables, you're talking about a plate of food in a restaurant. But there's so many different ways that you can approach that. And your job as a storyteller is to try and extract the new, extract the angle that's going to be enticing and delicious to a reader. There's certainly no single roadmap. There's certainly no single formula. That's the great challenge and a great excitement about writing food and wine journalism.
Every day for 5 days, these budding food writers had to cover an event at Tasting Australia. They had to write a 300-word article, no more, and file it for publication by 5:30 that afternoon.
My natural inclination was to describe some of the dishes that really caught my eye. And with the Battle of the Chefs, without having, I guess, the opportunity to smell the plates as they came out, you were sort of really trying to review what they'd cooked without seeing them cook, just based on what was on the plate, which was cold. So it was just being tasked with reporting just on what we were seeing rather than being descriptive.
They don't know how to start. It's not an aspect of writing that's often considered. And perhaps one reason is that there aren't terribly many jobs for food writers, and the jobs that food writers have, they keep holding on to for as long as they can. I'm Barbara Santich, and I'm a professor at the University of Adelaide, where I started a food writing course in 2008. It's one of those things, there never has been training for food writers. Margaret Fulton didn't have training as a food writer. She worked in an advertising agency. I wanted to be a food writer when I came back to Australia from travelling in Europe, and I'd previously worked in scientific research. And so I said to somebody, how can I be a food writer? And they said, well, you can't be a food writer until you've done a diploma in home economics. And I thought, I'm not sure if I really want to do that, and I didn't.
Instead, Barbara Santich started writing for Choice magazine, and from there she ended up in her dream job, working with Margaret Fulton at Woman's Day. Barbara not only teaches food writing, she's a well-published food historian and continues to get her articles into print.
Almost every magazine will publish something about food and cooking, and it might be the magazine that your gym puts out, it might be the magazine that comes out from the local group of pharmacies. All sorts of companies put out magazines, and there's always a page on travel and there's always a page on food. I wrote about a restaurant in Paris and it went into a seniors magazine. So if you're a food writer or if you're any sort of writer, you have to think, what's the likely destination for this piece? And you've got to think beyond the most obvious outlets.
Barbara, David Sly and their writing students head off on their daily story gathering, in this case to the commercial kitchens at South Australian TAFE, where there's a competition for kudos going on called the Battle of the Chefs.
These are all qualified chefs. There's no apprentices. It's an open field. I'm anxious to see which ones actually made it through from yesterday, and they're just starting now. They were presented with a mystery box of ingredients. They had 1 hour to sit down, write their recipe and submit that to the judges, go and get all their ingredients, and now it's time to cook.
And you've got your students reporting on this event.
They're at the windows now, furiously observing what's going on. Let's go and have a look.
And they're only doing two dishes, so that means they won't be presenting one out on the table there for us to see.
Right.
Which means it's quite different to yesterday, so it's a little bit more challenging for our people. Mm. There goes some of the dishes.
So they've had a chance to look at the dishes in this final day, but not taste the dishes. So how does that affect their journalism?
Well, they're not writing about the flavour. They're writing about the competition. They're writing about the people that enter. They're writing about the way a culinary competition might be run.
There's one event, but there's many possibilities of what stories they can write.
One of the students who was at the Battle of the Chefs was astonished when she heard one of the judges say, the problem is that they don't season the food properly, and she's a chef. And she thought, isn't that funny that here are professional chefs in a professional competition and yet the judges are saying that they're missing out on one of the basic aspects of cooking, which is to season the food properly. So that was the basis of her article.
And who is this chef turned food writer? Well, you've already met her. It's Lizzie Malt.
Don't forget the salt, says Matthew Camp, a UK guest chef at Tasting Australia, who offered his assessment to the contestants of Battle of the Chefs at Regency College yesterday. With 40% of the marks going to taste, seasoning is essential to flavouring a dish.
You felt you had the qualifications to back up that assertion.
Of course. I've worked in kitchens. Do you know how many times my hand's been slapped with wooden spoons, tongs, pans? Liz, where's the salt? Of course, you know, like, it's something you don't forget. It makes me upset, but, you know, I can't put my emotions of that experience into a piece like this.
Do you think there's a valid time and a place for you to go, as a former chef, I know, for example, that seasoning is essential, and how they could leave this out is bewildering to me?
That question scares me. So when does someone decide that they're allowed to do that?
Freelance food writer and teacher, David Sly.
I've seen a lot of inexperienced writers, when they try and be critical, their pieces are only damning. I see it in a lot of juniors that try and do restaurant reviews,
and all they do is find fault. I would hesitate to find any meal anyone's ever had that is wall-to-wall disaster from the time they walk through the door. It's not balanced and it's not accurate.
David Sly and Barbara Santich also praise the reportage of self-confessed computer nerd and food zealot, Stephen Wiltshire.
One would assume that professional chefs know kitchen fundamentals: hygiene, food safety, kitchen craft and appropriate use of seasoning. However, after the first round of the Battle of the Chefs competition, event judges were almost unanimous in their comments to competitors that the basics were found to be lacking in their performance. To an outsider, such criticism is surprising. It seems incredible that chefs working in the kitchens of restaurants that may serve hundreds of meals each day have to be reminded of basic hygiene practices and kitchen skills.
Now, instead of Stephen taking a personalised ground and said, I found that these skills were lacking, he quoted the judges. Then he introduced his own comment and said, I found this surprising as an observer. Now, I think that's really good balance.
The way you talk about it makes it seem such a pure form. And I must say, as someone who works in another arm of media, that one of my misperceptions, perhaps, of food writing is that it's often coloured by the sponsorship of the story that goes with it. David Sly, for example, has kindly taken us through China, courtesy of Beijing Airlines. Mm. You know, what kind of editorial pressures are there upon you to write a certain story about food in a certain way?
I'm lucky that I've got experience on my side. I would think younger writers coming into the game are probably going to be more prone to more pressures, perhaps. I'm not sure. Certain publishers may do it. I choose not to work with those publishers, or put it this way, I work with publishers that don't put those pressures on me.
And yet there are younger people, perhaps even some in this course, who, if they try and venture out into the big wide world of food writing, may find that pressure too hard to bear, and in fact would be terrified that if they don't bow to it, they won't get a job again.
Highly possible, and I think that's it's a difficult area. Some publishers will put pressure on people to say, okay, this company is advertising on it, we want a story on them. It's an ugly pressure, but it doesn't mean you have to roll over. I think you need to feel strong about what you're doing. Integrity and truth are all that you've really got as a journalist. You sacrifice that and you're on shaky ground. You hold that stubbornly, and maybe you might miss out on a couple of jobs and you might not get a couple of stories in a couple of magazines. Ultimately, you're going to be on stronger footing further down the line. I think you look for longevity. If you can stand beside your work and say with all confidence that it's work of integrity, that's always going to win respect.
Barbara Santich.
You know, there are such things as blogs, and more people are writing food blogs. Some of them are good, some of them are less good.
And do you find that if someone is good at blogging, that eventually they find an audience?
Yes, and in fact, one of the students at university, one of her pieces that was based on a visit to the Adelaide Central Market, she's had that published online in a forum in New York. So she was very pleased about that.
And does she get paid for that?
No, she doesn't get paid for it, but she gets published. You know, you either get paid or published, and if you can get both, then you're very lucky.
I'm not really in it for the money. I'm not in it for the acclaim, if there is any, but I'm in it because I enjoy it. It's a way of life. I'm not expecting to be published in Gourmet Traveller next week, but one day maybe.
Good luck with that.
Thanks very much.
He works in IT, but he dreams of another life. Stephen Wiltshire, just one of the 17 students practising the craft of food journalism during the Tasting Australia Festival in Adelaide. And we'll have more information about the university courses offered by Professor Barbara Santich, along with journalist David Sly, on our website. Just look for RN First Bite on the Radio National homepage.